भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 9 वर्स नंबर 23 टुडे। यूजुअली वी हैव ए बोर्ड हियर सो दैट डिवोटीज कैन रिसाइट। टुडे देयर इज नो बोर्ड, देयर इज नो वर्स टू रिसाइट, सो आई विल रिसाइट एंड maybe if somebody wants to follow, if you have a personal copy of the Gita, then you can chant after me. Yeah, there it is. So, ye pi anya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita तेपि मामेव कौन्तेय यजन्ति अविधिपूर्वकम्। ये ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। तो ट्रांसलेशन, दोज हु आर डिवोटीज ऑफ अदर गॉड्स एंड हु वर्शिप देम विथ फेथ एक्चुअली वर्शिप ओनली मी ओ सन ऑफ कुंती, बट दे डू सो इन ए रॉन्ग वे। ट्रांसलेशन, this was translation purport. Persons who are engaged in the worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is offered to me indirectly, Krishna says here. For example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree, without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regulative principles. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as avidhi purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. Welcome all the devotees, guests who have come here today for the daily evening class on Bhagavad Gita as it is. So we have reached chapter 9, verse number 23 today. And this chapter is titled The Most Confidential Knowledge. So a lot of important points are being discussed here. Today's verse, Krishna is saying, Yajante Shraddhayanvita. He is saying, Yepi Anya Devata Bhakta Yajante Shraddhayanvita. So he makes it clear that he is talking about people, he is talking about devotees who are worshipping with Shraddha. These are people, he is not talking about people who are just doing empty worship. So this is important for us to understand. There are many people who will just do official worship. They just need one person in front of them to worship. So he is not talking about them. He is talking about serious people. He is talking about people who are really devoted to their own deities. And that deity may not be the supreme person. That deity may be some demigod, some controller. But they are devata bhakta. Krishna, although we usually say that bhakti, this term can be applied only to the Supreme Lord. And for demigods, you can use the word worship. It is said that you can worship the demigods and you can love the Lord. Said generally that you can't apply the word bhakta or bhakti to the demigods. You have to say aradhana, you have to say puja. So, demigods are to be worshipped. Demigods ki puja hoti hai. But bhakti hoti hai sirf Bhagwan ki. But here Krishna himself, he makes it clear that I am not talking of those people who do it officially. He is talking about those people who are really serious. They are trying to love or they are trying to serve their own deity. So he's talking about people with lot of faith. But then he says, even those, they are bhaktas. They are bhaktas of their deities. So they have lot of love and all. It's not official. Yet he says, te api. But even about these people who have lot of faith in their own deity, mam eva. He says, they worship me only. But then avidhi purvakam. So what is wrong here is, or what he is suggesting is, although they have faith, that faith seems to be not based on any knowledge. That faith does not seem to be based on reason. Because if your faith would have been based on knowledge, if your faith had would have been based on reason, then they would not have placed their love in a demigod. They would have certainly, on the basis of their knowledge that they would have got from the proper people and proper scriptures, they would have placed their love in something that is permanent. If some student, you know, he's told, you take admission to a college, and then he's told that, you know, after 2 years, this college is going to close down. Which student will take admission to that college? However good, however nice the college may be, but he wants something that is permanent. He wants the college to stay, the university to stay there, till he passes out. For a person, you know, in our day-to-day affairs, somebody is told to invest money in a company, but that company is, you tell him that after 2 or 3 years, this company is going to crash. This company is going to wind up. He'll not invest his money in the stocks or the shares for that company. So everyone, it's normal for us to have a desire for permanent returns. To desire to invest in something that will never fail us, that will always give us some returns. So if somebody is really based on knowledge, if somebody's actions are really based on knowledge and reason, then it does not make sense to offer your love, to offer your actions to a person who himself is temporary. Everyone wants a friend that will help him always, that will stand with him through times of difficulties. A friend in need is a friend indeed. But if you are told to make friends with some person who's just there with you for a day, you know, people would think twice. That person is never going to meet you again. He is a temporary person in your life. So you would think again. So these people, it seems, they have faith. Krishna is mentioning Shraddhayan Vitaha. It appears that these people don't have the proper knowledge. Because if they had proper knowledge, they would not have invested their love in a temporary deity. Then Prabhupada mentions how this activity, what is this avidhi purvakam? Avidhi purvakam, Prabhupada mentions, is one is without proper knowledge, and second is without regulative principles. So either you do something wrongly, you do the wrong thing, or you do the right thing in a wrong way. So somebody is studying for his exams. So he studies the wrong textbook, maybe, you know, his syllabus has changed. So if his syllabus has changed, the textbook has changed. So he's referring to the old textbook still. He does not know what is right. He does not know that the syllabus has changed. So he's still referring to the old textbook. So he's doing it in the wrong way. He's doing the wrong thing. And the other avidhi purvakam would be, doing it wrongly would be, that you take a textbook, but then you read the wrong chapters. Maybe those chapters are not there for this exam. Or even if you read the right chapters, you don't study it properly. You just try to mug it up. Don't get to the basics like that. So doing something wrong or doing something not in the right way would have two aspects to it. One aspect is doing just the wrong thing. That the thing itself that you are doing, the activity that you are doing is inherently wrong. Or you are doing the right activity, but you are doing it in a wrong way. An example that comes to my mind is, let's say you are traveling by train. So you are going from one place to another place. So the right way to travel by a train is, you purchase a ticket and then board the train. But if somebody, he just flouts the rules, he thinks that, you know, I don't need a railway ticket. So he does not purchase a railway ticket and just boards the train, thinking that he can manage. So that is a wrong thing to do. That's not the correct thing to do. So if he gets caught, he'll be punished. And the other aspect that I mentioned, that you do the right thing but in a wrong way, would be, he knows that it's wrong to travel ticketless. You have to have a ticket. So he buys a ticket. But he buys an ordinary ticket. And then, probably he goes and sits in a first class compartment. So he's doing things the right way. He's doing the right thing. He knows that in order to travel, I have to buy a ticket. So he buys a ticket. But then he knows that actually this ticket is applicable only for certain compartments. And in certain compartments, this ticket is not valid. Still he does it. So he may do it out of ignorance or he may do it purposefully. But he has full faith. That person who's doing this, he has full faith in that activity. He says, you know, I see trains running every 2 minutes here. And I need to travel. And I see so many people traveling in those trains. So I need to travel now, and there here is a train in front of me which is going to that destination. So obviously it's meant for me. Obviously I need to travel by this train. So sometimes he may do it out of ignorance. He actually does not know that you need to purchase a ticket to board this train. Or sometimes he may do it purposefully, just for the fun of it. Sometimes students do that, just to check out whether they actually get caught or not. Sometimes they travel ticketless. Or the other case is, he knows that this ticket is for second class compartment, but then he purposefully or in ignorance boards the wrong compartment. Both these ways are not permitted. If you travel ticketless or if you travel with the wrong ticket in the wrong compartment, you are held responsible for it. So that is avidhi purvakam. So in our normal day-to-day activities also, we could end up doing such kind of activities and we'll be penalized for it. We'll be held responsible for it. So here, although this person here, Krishna says here, Anya Devata Bhakta Yajante Shraddhayanvita. So he has faith, but he does not have proper knowledge. And then such a person, what happens is, avidhi purvakam. And because you do it avidhi purvakam, if you don't purchase a ticket, or you purchase a ticket and you board in the wrong compartment, although you have everything, you have a ticket, but still you will be punished. Or you don't get your desired results. Maybe you are traveling and they, you know, ask you to get down midway. So although he is putting his faith, he is following certain rituals, he is doing some activities, but it does not yield him returns. When he is doing those activities, when he is worshipping the demigod, he thinks that he will get some benefit out of it. But unfortunately, because it's not in the right way, things can be contrary. The results can be contrary. The result is not guaranteed. The other two examples that are mentioned are, to understand this is, just like you give water to the root of a tree, just like you give food to the stomach. Now, stomach is just one organ of your body. And other organs like your legs, your hands could object to it. Now, you know, we are the ones who walk, we are the ones who work. But all the tasty, sweet, the best preparations, we don't get to taste them. We just get to handle them. We just get to transport them. The actual enjoyer is the stomach. And in our previous classes, you know, I remember treating this example of watering the root of a tree in great detail. So today I'll just like to highlight some points about this. Giving food to the stomach example, the other example which is given to help us understand this concept. Let's think, what could be this two aspects that were mentioned, that you do it, you do the wrong thing, or you do the right thing in the wrong way. So doing the wrong thing would be, you know that you have to put food to the stomach. So how does it reach the stomach? It reaches through the mouth. If somebody is a little bit medically conversant here, even this nose passage, it ultimately joins this, you know, passage here. So trachea and esophagus. There's a single passage for some distance here and then it bifurcates. One goes to the lungs and one goes to the stomach. So for some time here, there's a common passage. So one could say, one could get an idea, crazy idea, that even if I put foodstuff in my nose, these two are also holes that lead to the same passage, it could go to the stomach. Like just like this opening in my body leads to the stomach, these two openings also lead to the stomach. If you observe the human anatomy. So one thing is doing the wrong thing. So wrong thing would be, say I'm not going to do it the right way. I have heard that the usual way is to do it this, but then I have some other things to do. So he puts food in his nostrils. Or, you know, more crazier would be to put food in your ear holes. They are also holes. But it's of no avail. Or avidhi purvakam, doing it the wrong way is, the vidhi is, the prescribed method is, you put food only in the mouth, not in any other hole of your body. But even after putting food in your mouth, you don't just swallow it. Although mouth is connected to the stomach, you have to chew it. You have to chew it in different ways. And if you chew it properly, then food gets digested properly. So the other aspect that we have been discussing, one is doing the wrong thing and another is doing the right thing the wrong way. In this case would be that you directly swallow food. Sometimes children get into this habit. They don't know what is the right way to eat food. So they just swallow food. What happens if they swallow food? They get ill. That's not the right way to eat food. So one is that you have to put food in your mouth only. And not only that, after putting it in the right place, you also have to chew it. You also have to properly make it soft enough for your stomach to have the capacity to digest it. So that's why Prabhupada here mentions that similarly the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. So if food placed in the proper hole of the body, placed in the proper place, proper opening of the body, and also chewed and then given in a proper way, in a proper form to the stomach, what happens to such food? Such food is easily digested. What happens when food is easily digested? Energy reaches all the parts of the body. So although it appears that the stomach is the only one that is enjoying the benefits, are reaped, the benefits are enjoyed by all the parts of the body. So it's very important to understand how the Supreme Lord is like the root of a tree. You water the root of a tree and all the branches, the leaves, the fruits, everyone gets their share of water. And also how you put properly chewed food in the right place and it reaches the stomach. And because stomach supplies energy to the whole body, the whole body is energized. We have a powerhouse somewhere which supplies energy, which supplies electricity to this whole city. So all the coal, you know, it's supplied there in that powerhouse. Although we are using electricity here, we don't have a powerhouse here. We don't burn coal here. We don't have a nuclear power plant somewhere downstairs where we are producing electricity. There's a central place where you manufacture electricity, and then that production house of electricity supplies to the whole, different cities that are connected to that. So here we are consuming electricity, but generation happens at one local place. Consumption is happening in all over Bombay, such a widespread area. Similarly, although you are enjoying food in the stomach, but the benefits are enjoyed by the whole body. So this concept, it can help us to understand how by serving the Supreme Lord, Mam Eva. Eva word is used for emphasis. Eva means only. He does not say Mam. He says Mama Eva. Mama Eva means only me. So you can't put coal or you can't put your other energy substances in all the different places throughout Bombay. It's of no use. You're just wasting your time. You have to put the energy generating substance only in the powerhouse. Only there will the energy be created. Only there will the electricity be created. And only when it is generated in that particular place, then only can it be supplied all over the city. Only food has to be offered only to the stomach. If you offer it to any other place, it's not going to work out. You have to water the root of the tree. Any other place, it's not going to work out. Similarly, bhakti is only for the Supreme Lord. And if you do that, not that the other people are dissatisfied with you, other people are offended with you, other people are angry with you, they get their share. They get their quota. Currently we have this Ganesh festival going on, and you know, many times we hear aartis. We have neighbors here who perform the aartis, and sometimes we hear that aarti. So yes, you know, you glorify Ganesh very much. But if you closely observe, every aarti of Ganesh, you know, it ends with Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. You go to any mandap, you go to any home, when they perform that aarti, ultimately it has to end with the holy names of Lord Krishna. So they may chant Hare Ram first and Hare Krishna later. They are the holy names. Any puja you attend, you know, Om Achyutaya Nama, Om Govindaya Nama, starts with the holy names of Krishna and ends with the holy names of Krishna. Yes, in between certainly there is glorification because that puja is offered to that person, that particular deity. But the point behind this is every Vedic sacrifice, every Vedic worship ritual is incomplete unless you chant the holy names of God. And that's why here it is said that tepi mam eva kaunteya, but yajanti avidhi purvakam. If you can directly offer something to somebody, it makes sense. You have a government. The second example that Prabhupada gives here is that, you know, the demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. So you have a huge government and there are certain laws in the constitution. And how are these laws enacted or enforced? There are collectors and this and that, you know, different officers that represent the government all over the country. So in a local place, let's say one particular person, Mr. X, is a collector for a particular district. He can't change rules. He can't have his own rules in that particular place unless he wishes to break himself from the whole country. If he wants to be a part of the country, if he wants to enjoy the protection of the armed forces of this country, he has to follow the rules that are mentioned in the constitution of the country. He can't have his own individual rules. And he may have his own individual rules, but the citizens in that particular part, they also cannot agree to those rules. They have to make it clear to him that, say, you are a representative of the government. You don't have your own individual power. Only as long as you are in that post, do you have the power to carry out certain things. So you, being a representative of the government, you have to represent it. You have to just, you know, carry out the orders that are given to you. You have to enact the laws that are already there. You can't enact your own laws. And if somebody tries to directly approach, let's say you have some papers that are needed to be released in some government office. So sometimes, you know, it takes a lot of time for things to happen. And then one is tempted to directly approach the person in charge. So he goes to the person in charge, the clerk, the manager maybe, and says, can something be done? It's taking too much time. So it could happen that this person says, yes, I need some money to grease my hands. Some under the table dealings are necessary. If he does that, he's implicated. If he does that, he's held responsible. The usual way is to follow a certain procedure. So a person in charge, a person who's in that post, he can't accept money, he can't have under the table dealings. He can't, you know, ask for some extra money. And even if he does not want, if the person who wants to get his work done, if he offers some money, he's also implicated. If somebody catches him trying to offer a bribe to a government officer, it's unlawful. He'll immediately be caught, he'll be held responsible. So all these different deities who are in charge of different departments, they are like representatives of the Supreme Lord. So if somebody directly tries to circumvent the laws, to disregard the usual procedure and directly approach the person in charge, saying, if I please him, things get done fast. If I please this clerk, my file gets released fast. But that's not the right way. You may get your things done, but your life will be full of fear. You may always think, anytime, maybe somebody saw that transaction. Maybe this person himself will reveal it to somebody. Maybe tomorrow this thing, you know, that I got my things done very fast, it's revealed. So you won't lead a peaceful life in that way. Peace will come only when you follow the usual procedure, you follow the usual standards. Only then you will be happy. It might take more time, but... So usually we are very anxious to get things done. Similarly, these demigods, they are very powerful people in charge of their positions. If you approach them directly, sometimes, yes, things get done very fast. If you go the usual way, the right way, the preferred way, it might take you more time. Prabhupada used to give this example of, sometimes there is a small child in your somebody's home, and some guests visit, some uncle comes and this and that, some relatives come. So they'll see this small child and offer him some sweet or something, some candy to eat. And usually children like candy, so they're very glad to accept it. Usually you'll never find a child saying no. But this child, because he gets used to that candy, sometimes he ends up asking his father also. So even when there are no relatives, because he wants those candies, he likes the taste, sweet taste, So sometimes he asks his father also, "Father, can I have some candy today?" Father says, "No, you can't have." Why you can't have? Because in your tender age, eating too much sweet is bad for you, bad for your teeth. So this child could end up thinking that my father does not love me. My father is delaying things. My father is delaying my pleasure. All he has to do, does he not have money? He has a lot of money. All he has to do is go to a shop, buy some candy and give it to me. I want this, I want that. Why is he not giving it to me? But, you know, these relatives, these guests, sometimes they come. They are so nice. They are so eager to give pleasure to me. They are so eager to fulfill my demands. So demigods are like that. You go them, you approach them, you please them. They immediately give you whatever is due to you. But you approach the Supreme Lord, who is your father. God, I want this. Krishna, I want this. Krishna thinks twice. No, he is interested in your benefit. He has to think, if I give him this thing that he wants, is it going to help him or is it going to trouble him more? Is this thing that I'm going to give him going to bring him near me, or is this thing going to take him away from me? If his decision is that by giving this thing to him, although this person wants it, but if by giving this, the distance between him and me increases, he won't give you that thing. However pitiably you are crying, however intensely you are offering your prayers, "My dear Lord, please give me this. I'll be so happy if I get this." But somehow you don't get it. Why? Because the Supreme Lord has come to a decision that if you get that particular thing in your life, it will not be happy. It will not be good. You will not be happy with it. Whereas a relative who just comes to your home for once in a while, you know, once in a year he visits you, he's not much concerned about your health, about that child's health. Say, anyways, you know, I'm visiting him maybe once in a year, once in 2 years. So I might as well please him. I might as well give him some sweet to make him happy. At least he'll remember me. Oh, such a nice uncle, you know, he always gives me sweets. But he's not interested in your welfare. The father of a child is interested in his welfare. But the child may get frustrated with that. Child may think, "Oh, this is taking too long." And that's why you have demigods. That's why you have demigods. There will be people. There will be people who will never get satisfied with the usual way. There will be people who will offer bribes to the government officers. There will be people. However strict the anti-corruption bureau is, there will be people who are, you know, daily getting caught. This person tried to accept a bribe and this person tried to offer a bribe. There are always people like that. Everyone knows it's unlawful. It's a crime to offer a bribe. Yet people are there because they don't have that patience. So similarly, the many children of God, they don't have patience. They say, "I want results fast. I want a big home. I want it fast. I want a big car. I want it fast. I want to become a big famous person. I want it fast." So yes, then you have to approach the relatives. Your father is not going to help you. Just to please you, your father cannot act in, you know, opposite to your interests, because he's your father. He can't have those feelings, negative feelings towards you. He always has to think good for you. So yes, this facility of demigod worship is offered. All right, don't just give up anybody and everybody. At least try to connect to this demigod. At least try to get some candy from this relative. Don't try to steal from your father. Your father's clothes are hanging. Don't take his purse. Your father is not offering you candy. Your father is not offering you sweets. But you want to enjoy. So what will you do? A child may be tempted to steal money. A child may be tempted to do something wrong. So at least that child is told, "Don't steal. Certainly that's very wrong." At least when some uncle comes, you get it from the uncle. Okay, father is anyway not going to give you. Some relative comes, take it from the relative. But don't steal. So similarly, for people, it's accepted that some people will always be there who will never have patience to perform bhakti, then to try to please the Lord, and then try to explain to him your demands, and then if he's convinced about it, then he'll supply you. So for them, demigod worship is given. Don't become an atheist. Don't just give up. You know, "I asked God this, he did not give me this, so forget it. There's no God, there's nothing, I'm on my own, I'll do whatever I want." No. So the Vedic culture offers you the demigods. It says, "All right, this person is not giving you. Try asking these people. Try asking him." So then people have, you know, fasts and this and that, and they get things done. Many deities in Bombay even, You go and ask them, you do certain fasting on certain days, and your wishes get fulfilled. Now that's a different question, whether the fulfillment of that wish that you had is going to be beneficial for you or it is not beneficial for you. That's a question to be asked. But yes, your wish will be get fulfilled. But when it comes to Krishna, it takes a lot of time. So we have to understand this. Another famous verse that is usually offered during Gita courses, especially, sometimes people quote this verse. I don't know where the reference is from, but maybe you also have heard this. They say, Akasham patitam toyam yatha gachanti sagaram sarva deva namaskaram keshavam prati gachati. Heard this verse anytime? If you offer Vaishnavism to somebody, if you tell him, why don't you become a devotee of the Supreme Lord? He says, see, rain falls all over the land, rain falls over the mountain, rain falls over this and that. Finally, where does water go? Where does all that rainfall go? It goes to rivers. Where do all the rivers flow? Into the sea, into the ocean. So, akasham patitam toyam, water falls from the sky. But yatha gachanti sagaram, finally where does it go? It goes to the ocean. So somebody has said this, that sarva deva namaskaram. So you offer namaskars, you offer worship to all the devatas. Keshavam prati gachati. Finally it goes to Keshav. So they say, these people say, I met one man, he said, according to this verse, finally it's going to Krishna. So what's the problem? You are asking me to chant Krishna's name, but all I'm saying is I'm chanting these other names. And then it is said, just like water ultimately goes to the ocean, finally sarva deva namaskaram keshavam prati gachati. So ultimately it's going to go to Keshav, Krishna. So what's your problem? So I asked him, see, finally you are saying sarva deva namaskaram keshavam prati gachati. So you offer it to anybody, finally it goes to Keshav. Why it goes to Keshav only? Yes, I understand that this, according to us, you do namaskar to anybody and it goes to Keshav. It means Keshav is a different person. His status is different. Sarva deva namaskaram, in that sarva deva, no special name is mentioned. So all the other people, they are put in one category. Sarva deva namaskaram. Sarva, everyone. And what happens to if you offer obeisances to them? Keshavam pratigachati. It means these two are different categories. If you do anything here, finally it reaches here. So you might as well do it directly here. Does not make sense. If ultimately whatever you offer to this person and that person is going to go to Keshav, and Keshav is saying that, Maam eva konte yajanti avidhi purvakam. So he's giving you direct hint that you don't need to go here and there. Directly come to me. If you have a college just besides you, there's no point in going for a distance education program. You write letters to some far away university and they send you question papers by post and you send answers by post and like that. You have a college next to you. The university is next to you. You might directly as well go there and write your question papers directly. Does not make sense. So sarva deva namaskaram keshavam prati gachati, it means Keshav is special. You offer it to anybody, it goes to Keshav. So directly offer to Keshav only. Somehow he did not get convinced. It's difficult. It makes sense to understand that. He is a special person. If it's ultimately going to go to him, we might as well offer to him. So what is this special? The special is, this is a story. Here also Krishna says, Maam eva, only me. It does not say somebody else. Funny story. One person said, he was a devotee, so he was trying to prove the supremacy of God. So he asked a group of, assembly of people, is there something that any of you people can do that God cannot do? So one of the people sitting there, he had a lot of loyalty for his king. He was loyal to his king. So he said, yes sir, my king is so great, he can do something that your God cannot do. So this person said, okay, all right, tell me, what is that? So he said, my king can say, get out of my kingdom. And it can actually happen like that. So he said, God cannot say that. God, you know, it does not make sense. If God says, get out of my kingdom, where will that person go? There's no such place which is outside the kingdom of God. God is everywhere. Everything belongs to God. So can God say, get out of my kingdom? Where will that person go? The whole cosmic manifestation, the material world, the spiritual world, aham sarvasya prabhu, mattah sarvam pravartate. Everything belongs to God. So can God say, get out of my kingdom? No. But my king can say that. Of course, I mean, an intelligent man can understand this is not a denigration of God, this is a glorification of God, that he is such a person whose power reaches, his reach, his influence is everywhere. There's no place where he can say, get out of here. Well, his reach is everywhere. So that is speciality of Kesha. The ocean is so magnanimous, the ocean is so big, huge, that no matter how many rivers are coming and flowing, and so much water every year, every day is entering the ocean, but the ocean maintains its level. So similarly, Sarva Deva Namaskaram, Keshavam Pratigachati. Like that. And one small story, or one small example to understand is, right now in the morning Bhagavatam classes, we have the story of Gajendra the elephant going on. So for the people who are new here, there was one elephant called Gajendra. And he was the king of elephants, very stout and very strong. He had his family, big family. He had elephants who were his subjects. And one day, he wanted to drink some water. So he reached a lake and started tasting some water from there. So there was this alligator, there was a huge crocodile there, which caught his leg while he was trying to drink water. Now he is an elephant. He is very strong. There is no doubt about it. But in water, this creature of the land is difficult. Whereas the alligator, whereas the crocodile is a creature of water. So in water it gets its strength. Whereas the elephant, it's very strong on land, but in water it loses its strength. It's not a natural surrounding for an elephant. So that fight went on. The alligator is trying to catch him tight. And the elephant is trying to let go. It didn't work out. Finally, this elephant, he was a nice devotee in his last life. So in his intensity, he remembered some prayers to the Lord. So he started offering prayers. And these are there in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter. If anybody wants to read, you can read them. So in all these prayers, he chants around 20-25 different shlokas, trying to seek help. Because there's nobody to help him. He tries himself, he cannot get free. He asks for his family members, they don't help him. He asks for his subjects, they don't help him. Nobody is there to help him. Finally, he says, there's only one person who can help me, God. Draupadi also, she tried to save herself, didn't work out. She cried out to her husbands. Husbands were slaves already, they could not help. Finally, she gave up and cried out to Krishna. So similarly, Gajendra also, in that intense moment, he gives up all hopes, takes a lotus flower in that lake and offers it. And then he chants certain prayers. Now in all these prayers, there is no mention of whom he is addressing. If you read all those prayers, which are there every day, he says, to the Supreme, you know, to the all-powerful Lord, I offer this prayer that please help me. In all these other prayers, like Dhruv Maharaj's prayers, you read Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, he directly addresses Vishnu. Kunti Maharani's prayers, she directly says, oh Krishna, you are the leader of the Vrishni dynasty. So all other prayers, if you see, devotees have offered a lot of prayers in the Bhagavatam. All other prayers is direct mention of Lord Krishna's name. There is direct mentions of Lord Narayan's name. That I am praying to Lord Narayan, I am praying to Lord Krishna. Here Gajendra, he does not know who is the Supreme. So he is just saying, to he who is the Supreme, I am offering this prayer. So please help me. I am in a very pitiable condition. So these are the only prayers where the direct address is not made to the person. He is just saying to him who is supreme. So it is mentioned at the end. Finally, when his prayers are over, all the demigods are there because there is a big thing going on. For a dumb animal, elephant is not considered to be an intelligent animal. You say as wise as a jackal. You never say as wise as an elephant. So elephant is a strong animal but not considered very intelligent. So a dumb animal like elephant is offering choice prayers. It was a sight to see. So many people had come. All the demigods were there. Chandra, Vayu, Indra, Brahmaji was there, Lord Shiva was there, Gandharvas, Charanas, everyone was there. Trying to understand what's going to happen now. He's offering prayers, he's in such a pitiable condition. So it is said, after he finishes those prayers, because he has been throughout the verses addressing, "Oh my Lord, who is the Supreme? Oh my Lord, who is the Supreme?" They don't go. They don't respond to that prayer. They are watching the whole show. And if they would have thought that I am the Supreme and this person is addressing the Supreme, so he's addressing me. So if it was the case, then they would have immediately rushed to help him. But no, they are just standing aside. Because they know he is addressing the Supreme and I am not Supreme. So who's Supreme? Then Lord Krishna comes. Then it is mentioned that Lord Vishnu, he comes on Garud and with his disc immediately cuts the crocodile. And then in this way Gajendra is freed. So if you ask the demigods themselves, just like any honest officer of a government, if you ask him, "Are you the supreme person here?" He says, "No, I am just a small collector of this district. There are many districts, there are many collectors. The whole thing is run by the government." Now, who's the government? Who's the supreme person in the government? The president. The president of a country is the supreme most person in a particular country. And it, all the chief ministers, the prime minister, the cabinet, the different district or different, all these different levels of officers, they are just representing him. So are you the supreme? He says, "No, I am not the supreme." Similarly, in Gajendra's prayers, he's addressing, "Oh supreme, please help me." All these demigods are watching, but they never come to help him. And they say, okay, he is calling for the Supreme, so obviously Lord Krishna will come and save him. And that's what happens. So if you ask they themselves, "Are you the Supreme?" they are quite honest amongst themselves. But then what happens? Sometimes we see that, you know, Indra gets into that illusion. In Govardhan Leela, we can see that Indra got into the illusion that I am the Supreme most. So sometimes that thing is there. But generally speaking, they are honest and they accept that I am not the Supreme. In this particular case, like what is bhakti? Rup Goswami gives this definition. He says, "Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam." Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. You have to give up all artificial designations. But what do demigods think? They think, "I am a person who is very powerful. In a limited way, but I am powerful." So they identify with that upadhi. "Who are you, sir?" "I am Mr. Such and Such. I am a small person working in some company. I am a small student studying in some college. But I am something. I am a student, but I stand first in the class. I am working in this company, but I get the best employee award. I am a simple brahmachari, but I know all the shlokas of the Bhagavad Gita." So, even though you accept that you are not a supreme, still a little bit of pride can come. Little bit of identification with the upadhi, with the designation can come. And that is where demigods slip. They know that they are not the supreme. They accept it. But sometimes they identify themselves with that post. "So I am in charge of this department. I am in charge of rain. I am in charge of this department, that department." So in that sense, they are not pure devotees. They are karma mishra bhaktas. Karma mishra bhaktas means they are attached to their activities. They are attached to their positions. However, it is better than not, you know, accepting any responsibility on behalf of the Lord. At least they are accepting responsibility on the behalf of the Lord. It's better to serve the government. You may be proud about your position, but at least it's good because you are serving the supreme government finally. You are not wandering on the street where there is a chance to do something wrong. So it's preferred that you serve the Lord as a demigod instead of becoming an atheist. But yes, there is always a chance. Whenever you get power, it said, power corrupts. Is it not? Whenever somebody gets power in his hands, whenever you rise in your influence, there is always a chance for you to get corrupt. There is always a chance for you to think that I am great. So you may think, you know, that I am not supreme great, but yes, I am great. I am somebody. I am not the best, but I am somebody. So that's why demigods have a unique position where they are servants of the Lord and they accept it, they are honest with it. Yet, sometimes there are situations and sometimes there are stories and there are pastimes in which it appears that they get intoxicated by their position. They think that, yes, I am a great person, like that. And so there is, as I said, that at least the Vedic scriptures encourage you, all right, you don't want to connect to your father, so at least connect to somebody else. So they give you the option of demigod worship. So Hinduism is not pantheism. Hinduism is not 33 crore gods. Hinduism, Vedic culture is one god, and under him there are several department heads. This is a common misconception that he is also God, he is also God, he is also God, everyone is God. No, it's not pantheism. This is a monotheistic culture. Monotheistic is there's one God. He may have different incarnations, he may have different forms, but there's one God. There's Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. And under him there are different department heads. Alright, so I'll stop here. These are some of the thoughts that can help us understand today's verse where Krishna says, avidhi purvakam. He's not asking you to stop, but if you see this verse, he does not say, stop this worship. No. He's just giving you information that, my dear devotees or my dear readers of Bhagavad Gita, if you do this, if you are worshipping with faith some demigods, you are doing it avidhi purvakam. You are not doing it in the wrong way. You are not chewing the food properly. So when it reaches the stomach, maybe you will get indigestion. Maybe it will take a long, long time for you to digest that food. You are watering the branches, you are watering the fruits and leaves. So maybe some water will actually trickle down. Some water will reach the ground. And yes, some water may reach the roots. But you offer the whole water at the roots. That's the right way. Alright? So I'll stop here. If there are any questions, comments or suggestions, then I welcome them. So thank you very much for your patient listening. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.